Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. After the dark kind of mini episode today, I thought I'd go light and do something I haven't done in a while. A little gossip galore. I enjoy doing them, and I feel because of, you know, Epstein and all that kind of stuff that it has kind of taken a little back seat, but I thought I'd do something light. It is Saturday night. The smoke is heavy in the air tonight again. Just seems like every day. Anyway, the first thing I want to talk about is I talked about this back in April, I think, around then, something like that. Maybe even a little bit later. And it is about the whole Instagram removing the likes thing. Now, I understand that likes and all that kind of stuff, it can be almost like an addiction where you're posting something and you want all those likes. I get that. But that's not what Instagram is using as their cover. But it's not about that at all. What they're doing is similar to what YouTube did. You know, when YouTube said, oh, you know, if you don't have a certain number of subscribers, we're not going to allow you to monetize yourself. Why? Because they wanted the people that were already making the money, a lot of money, to make more money. And if you're small, then tough. What we're going to do is you're going to generate content and we're going to make money off of it. But you're not. And that's the same thing Instagram is doing here. Instagram needs more content. They want to be this full-blown, you know, selling kind of company. So they need content. They need as much as possible. And that's what they're doing here. And what they're really also doing is they're screwing over everybody who's just trying to start out. I'll give an example. Other than Instagram. You know, when I started the site 13 years ago today, it was almost too late, really, to get into the gossip writing world, if you will. I didn't go into it with any intentions of, you know, still doing it all this many years later. But the landscape was littered with gossip sites. And dozens upon dozens, if not 100. And, you know, one by one over the years, they've kind of, you know, wasted away. But the one thing that kind of kept me going was I posted, you know, 5 days a week until 2011. And then pretty much 7 days a week for the last 8 years. 7 days a week. I think I've missed 5 days or something in the last 8 years. Anyway, so even if you're kind of big, one of the things that you can be judged on right away on Instagram is the number of likes. It's a way for a company to see initially if they want to do business with you. Is it the most valuable metric? No. You know, there's plenty of people who have millions of followers and get tens upon tens of thousands of likes, but they're not influencers. However, it is a starting point. And Instagram says, you know, they're doing it to take the competition out of the posting. But it's not really a competition. People aren't in competition at Instagram. The influencers just want to make money. And when you're up and coming, the only way you really have any way of getting noticed, other than by having a gazillion followers, which you can buy, is to have likes. It's just an easy-to-see metric. And it only benefits established accounts because, let's say you're Kim Kardashian, who is 100% supporter of getting rid of it. Of course, because she's getting rid of all this competition of up-and-comers. She already has this established reputation. She doesn't care about the likes. She just wants to make sure that other people can't compete with her. And for brands, if it's an up-and-coming person, they're not going to be able to easily kind of see that this person has, you know, likes and engagement. There's no base kind of to work with. There's a guy who's an influencer who gave an interview, and his name is Zach Hasselby. And he's got about 90,000 followers on Instagram. And he said, you know, I think it'll be really hard to start being an influencer because of the fact that you're just not going to have that base. So it's the same thing YouTube. They're trying to just make it harder and harder, the barriers to entry. And it's just like any other business. You know, you watch something where some family-grown farm, and they want to, I don't know, raise and sell eggs. But local governments make it extremely difficult because they have been bought, essentially, by bigger corporations who say, no, you know, you need to have more standards, you need to have all these safety things, all of these things to contribute to a safe product. But these things that they want implemented costs, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, which some small mom and pop thing can't do. So they're essentially shut out of the business. And that's the same thing that's going on with Instagram. You know, obviously, likes is not the most useful metric. The guy who's the founder of Tribe, he gave an interview to Hack. And he said, you know, it's one of the most insignificant. But the thing is that, you know, he talks about, oh, the post engagement rate and post interactions divided by follower count impressions, the total number of times your content was served to users. Yes, those are all very important. I get that. Because if you're paying somebody, you want there to be some kind of click over to whatever it is they're selling. Get that. Totally get that. But that doesn't come right away. Some brand is not going to have that information. The first thing that they're going to look at is, okay, how many likes are on these posts? And then they'll reach out and say, hey, can we do a little test? And then we'll see how your metrics are. But they're not just going to go up to somebody who has 200,000 followers and say that, because the 200,000 followers could have been bought. So that's kind of the problem there. And the other thing is that Instagram has done is they have these creator accounts, and they're allowed to put like a paid partnership tag to post, and it funnels the post analytics to the tag brand. But the thing is, you have to have a certain number of followers to even get to a creator kind of account. So it's just, all they're trying to do is make it easier to buy stuff, and they just don't want to mess around with little people. They just only want people who have, you know, a ton of followers. Even on my Instagram, you know, you have to have, I think, 25,000 followers before you can swipe up or something like that. I mean, it should be available to everybody. So what you have now is the influencers all have to say, hey, leave a comment. It's a lot more work to leave a comment than just do a double tap. And, you know, I guess if they leave a comment, then it shows that you have very loyal followers, because they're willing to do that rather than just double tap. You know, it's just, you can't, gone then are the days where a company could just swoop by and say, oh, wow, look how many views or how many likes that got. It's just, you know, and then Instagram saying, oh, it's for mental health. No, it's not. They just want to roll out more aggressive marketing tools, you know? And when they stopped doing, I think it was 2016, they stopped doing the chronological feed. And now it's an algorithmic feed. And, you know, it's similar to Facebook, which makes sense since Facebook owns Instagram. And it was just a way, that was the beginning of the end, really, for small timers. Okay, moving on. I noticed that the stories are out in full force today about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle and baby number two and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's something to talk about, something to distract from everything else. We are about a week away or so from Meghan coming to L.A., a little bit longer. Tonight was the remembrance service, and all four, Kate and William and Harry and Meghan, were there on extreme opposite sides, as far apart as you could get, with the Queen and Prince Charles and stuff in the middle. Now, I didn't look at the photos all that closely. I did not see Prince Andrew there. I'm still waiting for the Remembrance Day one, but I did not see him there. So I thought that was kind of interesting. If he was there, just let me know in the comments. But I didn't see him there. I also saw that Kate is meeting with the BBC because maybe she's going to have her own documentary. And, you know, Harry's working with Oprah, so, you know, it's a completely different kind of monarchy. But now that, you know, Meghan and Harry did that documentary, Harry's going to do some stuff with Oprah. I mean, it kind of makes sense that, hey, we're going to be in Los Angeles most of the year because we're going to create some really positive content. And, you know, perhaps they will. But it's still all about, you know, getting your face out there and being in a place where everybody loves you rather than everybody just wants to be, you know, in your face kind of thing. Miley Cyrus, vocal cord surgery. I think that I'm trying to imagine her being quiet for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or however long this is going to be. And how will she and Cody get to plug stuff if she can't talk? I guess it'll be a lot of, you know, kissing and then, you know, little emojis and then captions that say, hey, buy this or a new album's coming out. Oh, I can't imagine Miley Cyrus being quiet for 2 weeks. I can't imagine it. She talks constantly. So this must be really killing her to not be able to talk for a couple weeks. And I totally buy into the whole vocal cord surgery thing. It's not anything else. It's not rehab or anything like that. It's just surgery and she's recovering. And it's a common enough procedure. However, you know, let's find out if it damages her vocal cords. We don't really know enough about the surgery yet because it can really affect the way that you sing. And sometimes it'll make it so you can't sing again. I haven't, you know, seen anything where it was that kind of surgery, but anytime you're going in and doing something to the vocal cords, it can be really detrimental to your singing. Speaking of singing, oh my goodness. Madonna, what are you doing? A bunch of people are suing her, class action. And this guy that originated the lawsuit, he says that his tickets have lost value because Madonna was showing up 2 hours late for concerts. They were supposed to start at 8:30 and she was showing up just whenever she wanted. And most of the time it was about 10:30, which is ridiculous and shows no respect for your fans at all. You know, that's one of my biggest pet peeves. And I always call out people for just disrespecting fans like that who have plans. You know, hey, 8:30, great. You will be done by 10:30. Maybe they have a sitter. Maybe they have other plans. Maybe they came from out of town. You know, and they have a 4-hour drive back. It's common courtesy. And so Madonna, to make it so she wasn't late, she changed the ticket times to 10:30 p.m. Was this Coachella and a bunch of 20-year-olds? I mean, some Coachella shows don't start till midnight. There was the one year Kanye was out there. I want to say it was a Sunday night. And he started about 12:30. It was ridiculously late. But, you know, it's a festival and you just kind of, you know what you're getting. But a regular show, 10:30 at night, and that's just kind of ridiculous. So you're going to end the show about 12:30. And like I said, what if these people do have a 4-hour drive? They're going to have to spend the night, spend more money. But anyway, this guy sued and he said that his tickets are less valuable and he made it seem as if he was a fan going to the shows. But what I think he is a ticket broker who's buying tickets. And now with the show starting at 10:30, everybody's like, I'm not going to go see a show at 10:30. So you're stuck with those tickets that you bought. Or before, when she was just showing up 2 hours late and people got word of it, they're like, I don't really want to buy tickets because I don't want to go see a show where she's going to be 2 hours late or maybe 2.5. And what does Madonna say about it? Madonna said something like, the queen is never late. Really? You were 2 hours late every single night. What the hell are you doing? You know, what are you doing every single night that you can't be there at 8:30? I don't get that. Your one job is to be there at 8:30, not 10:30. And then, you know, and think about all the people that work in these places. What about the concession workers? Do you think that maybe a lot of them have a sitter and they need to be home long before 1 o'clock in the morning? And they're making minimum wage and they're, you know, essentially maybe paying extra now, especially when she was 2 hours late. So then these concession workers are working all this extra time And then maybe they're even getting overtime, although I doubt it because they don't usually get overtime because they don't work enough hours in the week. But it's just, she's only thinking about herself. You know, what about everybody else? And the people then have to clean up afterwards. And maybe, you know, it's a long process. Maybe they have to switch it over to something else for the next day. And she's just like, I don't care. I'm the queen. I'm never late. I get to do what I want. And that's just ridiculous. You know? And don't change the time to 10:30 like that. Just go back to 8:30. Be on time. Play your songs and your lack of hits. You know, you wonder why your concert attendance is down. And it's because it's obvious you don't care. Madonna has never really cared about her fans. Ever. You know my pet peeve about playing your old songs, playing your hits. Yes, play your new record. I get that. Play it. But you better sprinkle in a whole bunch of other stuff. And Madonna doesn't like to do that. She's very, oh, you know, you're not going to get to hear, you know, whatever. Anything from my first six albums. You'll get to hear Holiday, maybe. You know? Lucky Star sometimes. And the thing is, people want to go and sing and have a good time. And if they haven't bought your new record yet, or maybe they have, but there's only one catchy tune, you're just going to have them sitting there and looking at you while you go through all these. And they're going to be really upset because you were 2 hours late. You know, it's just, you're asking people to give a ton of money, not just for the tickets, and ticket prices are outrageous right now. So you're asking them, okay, buy the tickets, go out to eat or eat at the arena, buy merch, all this kind of stuff, you know, and it just make travel arrangements, fly in, whatever, all to see somebody. And the person that's being seen should say, gosh, you know, these people have spent a ton of money to see me. I need to show them a little bit of respect. I need to be on time. I need to do what they are paying me to do. And not just the ticket prices, but so much more. And she doesn't care about that stuff. She doesn't even think about that stuff. And it's obvious with all this, she just thinks about herself. Another person who just thinks about himself all the time is Christian Genius Billionaire. CGB. Gonna trademark that, aren't you, Kanye? He is closer to being minus a billion than to positive a billion. I don't get it. You know, he's just... You do you, Kanye. You do you. But this, you know, oh, that's what he's going to call himself now? Christian Genius Billionaire? And then he gave that interview and talking about his algae shoes and, you know, it was supposed to be about Fashion Week and design, and he just totally made it something else. One thing that was interesting, though, that I caught a quick glimpse of is that he went to this event for Riccardo Toschi, and we haven't heard much from Riccardo lately. I mean, he and Kanye used to be inseparable for many years, and then there was some kind of split. So it's interesting that Riccardo and Kanye are apparently, you know, hanging out again. So we'll have to see where that leads, because I think Riccardo, you know, Kanye, downhill Kanye happened about the same time that he and Riccardo stopped really hanging out together all the time. I mean, there's the odd every once in a while. But this was a pretty big thing honoring Riccardo, and Kanye was there, so we'll see how that goes. Oh, Constance Wu, how happy are you? Oh, you can see it, you know, fresh off the boat. Just, can you imagine the tension this year when they were filming? You know, it got canceled, but I don't know if you noticed, earlier this week they announced a spinoff. So, you know, some of the people will still be working, and it just, you know, you've already heard me rant about Constance and, you know, Crazy Rich Asians. And like I said, fine movie. You know, really good movie, but nothing spectacular. And I went through the list, and I said that she was about the fourth or fifth best person in the movie. You know, but she thought, oh, I'm going to be a huge star. I can't believe I have to go back to this show where I'm getting paid, you know, $150,000 a week. Ugh. The misery. And I actually think she was getting paid more than that. I think it was closer to like 300,000. So 300,000 times 20 something episodes, $6-7 million a year. Oh, I don't want to go back there. Really? Because there are probably every single other actress in Hollywood would love to be in that position where they're making $7 million a year. And they're working, you know, 5 months a year, something like that. You know, they start filming in around August-ish, finish up in about March-ish with a bunch of vacations in between, sometimes April. You know, it's just, that's the sense of entitlement. And I wasn't going to make this a constant woo bashing situation. But what do you think it was like for everybody else to go to work every day and know that Constance didn't want to be there and, you know, didn't want to do the show and was definitely going to, I don't know what her contract situation was like. I don't know if she was signed on for next year or not, but if she wasn't, you know, she wasn't going to go back. So they're just like, yeah, fine, we'll cancel it. Plus, I think they gave it a crappier time slot. I don't remember what it was, but I think it was Friday night or something like that. So, you know, bye-bye, fresh off the boat. But there is the spinoff. You know, and it was just another chance to go after Constance Wu. I don't know if it's a huge story, but I did not know this. You know, I did not know that Rico Kasich and Paulina Porizkova were splitting up. So that's one that got by me. But it shows you also that, you know, if you're not front and center and you don't use PR people constantly, that you can have a pretty normal life as a celebrity. And, you know, it only came to light after Rick passed and, you know, his will became public and it said, you know, we were getting a divorce. And so I'm not leaving Paulina anything. And Paulina knew that she wasn't getting anything. I mean, it's kind of ironic that she's the one who found his body. But it was, you know, it just shows that you can keep things quiet if you want to keep things quiet. And if you don't, then, you know, you don't. Kind of like FKA Twigs. Or as I like to call her, AKA Sticks. She gave an interview where she was talking about Robert Pattinson and their relationship and how they are, quote, you know, how they became unmeshed. Not uncoupled, but unmeshed. Can we just say that we split? Is that not allowed? You know, we were meshed and then we unmeshed. We were coupled and then we uncoupled. We split. Seems pretty easy. Instead of trying to sound all, you know, fancy or something, I don't know. The relationship that FKA and Robert had is Robert is not Mr. I'm going to call the paparazzi. Okay? He will go out. If you see him out and about, he'll gladly take a picture with you. Gladly. He might be half in the bag, and then he's even more likely to take a picture with you. A very nice guy, for the most part. There are some women that would disagree because maybe he hasn't treated a couple of them the right way. And I'm not talking about like sexually assaulting them or anything like that. I'm just talking about just kind of being a tool, right? But overall, a nice guy who doesn't seek out a bunch of fame or anything like that. Now, his PR people, when they were trying to get the Batman, they really pushed it. But, you know, it was because of those PR people and them pushing it really hard that he got the role. He might not have otherwise because I think he was second. But the PR people putting it out there that he was going to get it, they kind of said, okay, fine, right? So they did their job. But he's not the one who's going to call, you know, the paparazzi or anything. But FKA Twigs, who said, oh, this relationship just, it's, she was the one who was always calling the paparazzi every time they went out. Look at this. Look at all the times you've seen Robert Pattinson since they split. Out at a bar or being caught by the paparazzi. How many times? A handful, maybe? How about when he was with FKA Twigs? Every single time they went out. Every single time. Because she called to let them know where they would be. Because she wanted the publicity. She wanted it really badly. And I think she tried the same thing with Shia. And Shia was like, no, no, that's not for me. Shia likes to do things his own way. Again, not always the nicest guy. For sure. You know, but I mean, you know, you want to attribute it a little bit to sobriety issues. We'll do that for the sake of this, you know, argument. But he likes to do what he likes to do. He's all into the experimental stuff, and he likes things to happen organically, and he's a method actor. The last thing he wants is somebody to say, hey, let's go out tonight. Because first of all, he doesn't like to go out all that much. And second of all, oh, look, oh, the paparazzi are here. How'd they get here? And Shia just said, you know, that's just not me. I don't do that. And that was the end of that. So in both of these cases, you know, FKA picked people who are kind of publicity shy and then kind of force the publicity on them. And then starts talking about, oh, it was just so difficult because of the public eye kind of thing. Well, you're the one who did it. So, have you had a Popeye's chicken sandwich? I have. I mean, it's a fine sandwich. I like it better than Chick-fil-A. I'm not really a chicken sandwich kind of person. You know what kind of turned me off to the chicken sandwiches is, what was it? The Kentucky Fried Chicken. Man. I forget what it was. Like the bread was two chicken patties or something like that. It was something just over the top ridiculous. And I just finally said, you know, enough is enough, you know? And I don't know. I haven't really eaten a lot of chicken sandwiches since then. Fried chicken is not really my go-to thing. Although I do like chicken fried steak. But I don't know. Anyway, but fried chicken's not really my thing. I just find it to be, even for me, somebody who can eat a ton, it's so greasy, you know? And, I mean, I had the Popeye's chicken sandwich. It was fine. I didn't have to go through any of the drama or anything. I mean, people are getting killed over these sandwiches. That seems a little bit over the top. I mean, it's a good sandwich. Am I going to wait in line for one? No. Am I going to risk my life for one? No. Do I care about it that much? No. There's always another sandwich. It might not be quite as good, but, you know, I don't have to have any trauma. When I went, there was two people in front of me, and they had them available. So, you know, and it was fine. But anyway, if you had one, I would like you to tell me if you think it is the best sandwich you've ever had, if it's worth waiting in line for. So I don't know if you listened to the radio show yesterday. I don't even know what time it comes on because I'm all messed up with the time zones, but it's like 7:30 in the morning or something and 6:30 in the morning out here, but it's always usually on their Facebook station. I mean, the Facebook page of the station, I think on Mondays or something like that. So you can listen to it if you don't catch it live. But as I told you, I knew that they would want to talk about Drake and Kylie. So I went off and I said something about, you know, nothing would, you know, Kris Jenner still hasn't stopped orgasming from when Kanye took an interest in Kim. But this would probably, you know, strengthen it a bit. First of all, let's just ask a couple of questions. Could they hook up? Yes, because Drake will pretty much sleep with anyone at any time. So that's a big yes. Check. Does Kylie like rappers? Check. Is Kylie young enough for Drake? I mean, Kylie's not that old. I think he would prefer her to be a little bit younger, perhaps a teenager. But I would say yes. But for them actually, like, dating or something, I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. First of all, if Kylie thought that she was getting cheated on a lot by Travis, it's going to be about 10 times that amount. And, you know, I don't think that Kylie wants to travel all over the world, you know, where Drake goes and stuff. So maybe if he's in town or something, but I don't see it. What I see is a Kris Jenner opportunity to make it seem like they're going out and to build up that brand a little bit more. You know, Courtney's leaving the fold, at least the TV show part. Maybe Robert's coming back in. But, I mean, how interesting is Rob going to be? The only time he was ever interesting is when Lamar was on the show. Because they hung around. Oh, I guess when he was dating Adrian Bailon, that was interesting. But I mean, that was years and years and years and years ago, right? So I don't know. Does anybody really care? Does anybody really want to watch him go online and find his Instagram model of the day? Maybe. But, you know, Kris Jenner will never miss an opportunity to get something out there. How many different guys has Kendall Jenner dated for a week? Or, oh, they're together. And then the next week, you know, they just kind of don't ever say that they split. They just, the next week, oh, Kendall Jenner's dating this guy. None of them ever seem to stick, do they? The only guy that we've ever seen her kissing, I think, is Anwar Hadid. The guy who stole the AirPod from somebody in London. And don't tell me that he didn't. You know, I think that the guy was a bit aggressive. But hey, AirPods aren't cheap. And he tracked it. And he said, you know, he asked Anwar, he said, you know, it's taking me right here. And they're like, we don't have it. We don't have it. And then they walked away finally. And he's looking at, you know, where's my iPhone app or whatever. And he can see it walking away exactly like they're walking away. I mean, come on, Anwar. It's such a tool thing to do. You know? Ugh. Anyway. I've talked about this in blinds before. And I don't know if I've ever talked about it on the podcast, but this whole Kaylee Cuoco living separately from her husband thing. I get the... You know, Carson Daly said that he and his wife sleep in separate beds, in separate rooms. I could totally get that. I don't know if his wife, I think his wife is pregnant again. But, you know, but maybe Carson snores to all hell, you know, and they sleep better in separate rooms. That's a completely different thing than Kaylee and her husband not living together. Now, Helena Bonham Carter and Tim Burton slept in separate houses, but the houses were next door to each other. So that's a little bit different, too. I don't know. Maybe they think it'll work better. Maybe, you know, Kaylee says, oh, you know, we love, you know, staying separately. But do you? Because Kaylee's usually the kind of person who just is, I don't want to say clingy, because that kind of seems rude, but very, very much into the person that she's with. To the point of it kind of being clingy. So I feel as this is not her idea. That this is more of Carl's idea. And she loves it because he loves it. But I think that if you gave Kaylee the choice, then she would say, hey, yeah, I'd really prefer to live with him. Oh, I guess I'm just going to talk about every single damn Kardashian Jenner. But Caitlyn is going to be on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, which ran for a few seasons in the U.S., but now is essentially just a British thing, and they film it every year at this time out in Australia. And she's never watched it, doesn't know how it works, which is fine. But don't you think that if you're going to be on a show, that you would at least watch a few episodes to see how it works? And what a Bush Tucker trial is and all that kind of stuff? And she's getting paid about $650,000. That's a lot of money for a few weeks' work. And I don't know if there's some kind of thing in there where she's guaranteed a certain amount of time, or if she gets the $650,000, even if she gets eliminated in the first couple weeks. So, but I don't know. If I was going to be on a show or something, I would do a little bit of research. Again, I think it goes back to the respect thing. They're paying you $650,000. At least take an interest in the show that's paying you $650,000. Did you know it is almost time? It is almost time for the one-year anniversary of Nick and Priyanka. God help us all. I don't have anything more to say about that. Just God help us all. If it's anything like the wedding celebrations, I think we are in for a PR blitz like no other. She's got some projects coming out in India. You know, Nick's still doing the tour. I think they're on their final leg. About to be on their final leg. Please don't let it be like the weddings. I can't handle every time I look at a website to have some kind of Priyanka and Nick anniversary story. It will kill me. So please, please don't do it. Speaking of splits, although it wasn't speaking of a split, it seems to me that Britney Spears and her boyfriend are really kind of drifting apart. Yes, I know he shows up in the videos sometimes, but it's less and less. And they're spending less and less time together. And, you know, she's taking a trip without him. I think the whole Britney trying to help him make money, I think he wants her to do more for him business-wise, so I think he can get out from that shadow. I feel the tension in the air. And I think that when we get into the next round of the conservatorship hearings and stuff, that maybe something like that will come to light. I get this feeling that it's not as strong as it was. And I feel as if the last couple months, 3 months, and I don't think it has anything really to do with the conservatorship or anything. I think it just has to do with him, I don't want to say wanting to use her, but in a way, you know, he wants to have his own thing, but the way he wants his own thing is by her, you know, helping him, by giving him some plugs and things like that. So, I don't know. I was going to talk about Ryan Seacrest and Shayna Taylor, and, you know, she got, you know, contract extended through the summer, now award season, so I guess she'll be around till March, whenever the Oscars are. I don't have it in front of me. February, March. I don't know. It's obviously that it's just so fake. At least, I guess they don't just, because, you know, they'll take pictures, but it's not just rubbed in our face like a Shawn Mendes and Camila. You know, I mean, oh, I talked about that on the show yesterday too. Oh, in case you didn't hear, don't know what happened. So I think Sean's in Australia or something, right? So you have the time zone, the different day, okay? And Camila was in Hollywood and had called a bunch of paparazzi because she wanted to FaceTime with Sean, and of course was going to have this entire FaceTime caught by the paparazzi so they could show how much they love each other. You know, normally it would probably be done in the privacy of her home, but we don't get any fame or any acknowledgement of our love if I do it inside the house. Let's do it outside on the sidewalk and invite a bunch of paparazzi. But the thing is that it was also confusing with the time change and the day being a different day. It took forever, and the paparazzi, you know, some stuck around, but it was just a real mess. And they kept changing the time. But, you know, eventually, you got the shot of her walking down the sidewalk and talking to her love, and they took some questions from the paparazzi. That's what I'm talking about. Contrast that with Rick and Paulina. Going through a tough time. They've been married a long time. Going to get a divorce. Quiet. But then, you know, it just shows there is a level of thirst that is so high. And Sean and Camila are there. And I love when people go on Twitter and they say, oh my gosh, they're so in love. You have no idea what they're talking about. Yeah, right. Okay. Right there with you. Can we all agree that John Edmonds is an a-hole? Jim Edmonds? Yeah, I mean, I think we can. Oh, who calls the police after your soon-to-be ex goes out drinking and says, I don't know if she's able to take care of the children? I mean, who does that? Who calls the police? Just say, hey, are you okay to watch the kids? Because he was at her house watching the kids while she went out. She comes home, maybe a little buzzed or whatever. He says, are you okay to watch the kids? She goes, yeah, I'm fine. Great. Leave it alone with that. Walk away. Go home. And she says, you know, I'm a little bit buzzed. Jim can go, hey, you know, I'll stay here if you like. But instead he calls the cops. Has the cops come over and embarrasses the hell out of Megan. Now, this is not to say that Megan is you know, perfect. I mean, how did she and Jim start dating? And then she gets upset if she thinks it's happening to her. Okay. But at the same time, that was so wrong. It was just awful. And then he goes on social media showing off his new place and everything like that. And the nannies, you know, liking all his posts on social media. But Megan says that she doesn't think that Jim actually cheated with the nanny. She's not sure. But her gut says no. I don't know. My gut says yes. There was a story that some people are trying to say that Hillary Duff got secretly married. She might have, but she doesn't. She's going to say no until, you know, the Lizzie McGuire show starts up. I mean, Disney Plus is just going all in with everything. And God, they have a lot of commercials. Goodness, no matter what I watch, no matter what channel, it's just Disney Plus, Disney Plus, Disney Plus. And the funny thing is I never thought that there would be anything after the Lizzie McGuire movie, because she trashed the hell out of Disney and they trashed her right back. And I don't think people remember that. When they were going to do the next season of the show, her parents, especially her mom, told Disney that Hillary had been offered six figures a week by multiple networks for shows. And Disney was paying her about $35,000 an episode, which is a lot for a kid like that. And remember, this is many years ago. And Hillary just said, no, we want $100,000. Well, her mom. And Disney said, nope, sorry, bye. They let a successful franchise just go. And they called the bluff. And Hillary didn't have any place to go. She likes to say that she was so burned out that she just wanted to take, you know, a 5 or 6 year break. No. She just couldn't get that $100,000 a week. I mean, she barely got the Lizzie McGuire role. I think she had to have like 4, 5, 6 auditions. They were not sure. And it's really easy to, for Disney, they go, we got 6 million other shows. So I thought it was, you know, that they decided to reunite. I think she got promised also, I think the other bad blood was that she got promised like a $500,000 bonus in the movie when it hit 50 million, but then they didn't pay it. Anyway, and they were gonna make a second movie and they offered her $4 million or something like that and 4% of the gross. But her mom said something like they wanted that bonus paid and Disney said no and then withdrew the offer. So essentially she cost herself, let's say the show went on a couple more seasons and then the movie, she probably cost herself $10 million. That was a really bad bluff. And in the remake, the reboot, Lelaine's not in it. She was the one who played Miranda. And after the show ended, she got arrested for meth possession and it was really rough for her for a while. She missed the last season of the show, the movie. She's not going to be on the reboot. She was in a band called Vanity Theft. I think it was originally like Vanity Fugitive or something. But when she was in it, it was called Vanity Theft. And I think she lasted about 8 months before they kicked her out. But she's a really nice person. And she has changed her life around so much. I mean, the Vanity Theft thing was like in 2010. And I think she got arrested for meth in 2007. Totally different person. Really, really nice. And I was really hoping that she would be on the reboot. I think it would make a lot of sense, but she's not going to be. Did you have, well, I haven't watched it, but apparently in The Irishman, right? This Netflix 3-hour monstrosity movie. So Anna Paquin's in it. And everybody's saying that she's going to get an Oscar. She's in the movie 10 minutes out of 3.5 hours or whatever it is. She has 6 words in those 10 minutes. But everybody says her acting is so good without using the words. So I guess I need to see it. If somebody's seen it, you know, let me know. I don't really have any desire to wade through 3.5 hours of that just to see. So if somebody could tell me, that'd be great. But that would be, I didn't look up what the record is for fewest words to get a supporting actor or actress nomination. it's pretty low, I think. But I'm not even sure. I mean, 10 minutes is just such not... that's not very long at all. So she might get nominated just because people are talking about it, that, you know, for the six words or whatever. But I can't see her winning. But, you know, if you've seen it, let me know. You know, convince me to go watch the 10 minutes. I feel like such a... talking about Oscars and Anna Paquin and talk about Janelle Evans for a minute. Let's not lose sight of the fact. And I know there's somebody who listens to the podcast and essentially berates me every time I mention her or write about her in the blog. But I never lose sight of the fact that she profited off a dead dog. A dog that was killed. That was, you know, beaten in front of her kids. And she decided to make a profit off of it. And that she lied to the police about it. And then there's the photos of her with Nathan Griffith. You know, she is trying to do the quickest rehabilitation possible. I am not convinced that she is not with David. If I had the desire and a couple of bucks, I might hire a private investigator just to see. And I'm hoping that somebody like Radar is spending a couple of bucks, or somebody from American Media. Because I think that they would be give photos of the two of them together. This is just all a scam perpetrated by Janelle and MTV to get her back on the show and increase the ratings. And if they hadn't thrown that carrot out there, I think that she wouldn't have split with him. I think that they were also desperate for money, so they had to do it. But she still profited off a murdered dog and then lied about it to the police. Is this somebody you want on your show? Not me. Not me. And every chance I get, I'm going to mention that. So, let's see. Oh, you know, I don't know if you guys watched 2020 last night. But there was an interview with Jesse Buttafuoco. And those of you of a certain age are going, I don't know who the hell that is. Don't blame you. But she is the daughter of Mary Jo Buttafuoco and Buttafuoco, whatever, and Joey. And back in the day, oh my gosh, 1992, it was everywhere. This was the tabloid story of the year. They made multiple made-for-TV movies about this. Amy Fisher and Joey, Amy was really young, and Joey were having an affair. And I don't know if Joey wanted to split with Amy. I can't remember. But Amy went over to Joey's house. And Mary Jo, Joey's wife, answered the door. And Amy shot her in the face. And Mary Jo lived. And Jesse, the daughter, lives with Mary Jo. Oh, I think Amy was 17 at the time or something like that. And Amy wanted to be with Mary Jo and shot her in the face. And somehow she lived. And Amy served 7 years. Got out in 1999, and Joey served about 4 months for statutory rape. Joey and Mary Jo stayed together until about 2003. She's gotten remarried, and, you know, Amy started filming some porn. And then the crazy thing that Jesse was really upset about was, to make money, Mary Jo, Joey, and Amy would go do appearances together. And it just... to me, that's so weird. And Jesse couldn't, you know, even imagine it. And and Jesse talked about, you know, her whole life kind of was crazy because of that. And she, you know, started abusing drugs and alcohol and had eating disorders and stuff like that. And Jesse said that when they started doing these reunion things, she didn't speak to her dad for about a year. But Mary Jo would go to him too, and she lives with Mary Jo, so... I don't know. And it was all during this time when she was struggling with drugs and alcohol and these eating disorders. And, you know, and she said, you're going around, you know, the streets of New York with the woman who tried to murder my mother. I mean, this isn't a joke. It's not a paycheck. You know, it's messed up. But, you know, that's what they did. Jacqueline Lurita. God bless her. You know, at least she says her mind. But at the same time, a little bit of a double standard. She's talking about Teresa and Joe Giudice. She talked about them on a podcast and said, you know, we always knew that they were cheating on each other, and, you know, that's just kind of the thing. And then she was talking about that despite all of that, that Teresa should have moved to Italy with her husband, and that Jacqueline moved all the way to California with her husband, even though all her family was in New Jersey, just because it's the right thing to do. Well, Jacqueline hasn't been on the show in a few years. And I surmise that if Jacqueline was still in the show, that they would have never moved to California. And if her husband had got a job offer in California, that she probably would have stayed. So, oh, speaking of Real Housewives, come on. Monique. Second degree assault she's been charged with for getting physical with Candace Dillard. I don't condone violence, but have you watched Candace? No, again, I'm not condoning it. But have you seen Candace? I mean, ugh. I'm not condoning violence. But I mean, Candace is insane. And it sucks because, you know, Monique's husband is probably my favorite housewife husband by far. I don't even think it's close. I mean, just a great guy. And I'm just in my head, I'm running through all the housewife husbands. No, he's the best. By far. It's not even close. And I just... But anyway, so Monique has to go to court, I think December 23rd, which kind of sucks, right before the holidays or whatever. And she could be arrested right there if the judge says there's probable cause. It's not a big deal. But the thing is, this happened back in October. And of course, Bravo cameras were filming. You know, and Monique grabbed, you know, Candace by the hair and pulled her down. And now she, you know, I don't condone violence, but I really can't wait to see that scene. And, you know, I just, ugh. But man, Candace, really. If you haven't watched Real Housewives of Potomac, please do. Even if you've never watched any Real Housewives, I promise you will enjoy it. Let's see. Any other things I want to talk about? Robin Crawford, you know, talking about Whitney and the relationship and all of that. I think it's great that Robin did it. I think it's great that Robin talked about it. I think that the relationship with Whitney went on much longer. I think Robin was kind of maybe trying to show a little respect or something, but it went on through the Bobby Brown, you know, marriage. It went all the way up to, I mean, Bobby Christina was born and everything. So it went on a lot longer than Robin talked about in the book. And I'm not sure why she decided to say, no, it stopped right about here. But I'm glad that she talked about it. You know, Chip and Joanna Gaines, you know, they're having a new network. You know, they stopped doing stuff for HGTV. And what I've heard is that they're really trying to poach a bunch of HGTV people. And I think that there's going to be a war. I think that, you know, there's going to be a big war because they have to fill a network. And there's going to be a lot of cooking shows, home shows, talk shows, or whatever. But they're trying to poach from Food Network and HGTV. And I think that it's just going to be really ugly. And it's going to kind of sully their image a little bit to be in these wars. I don't know. It's just something I was thinking of. Another thing is I saw that they're going to make Paranormal Activity 7. And, I mean, at some point, how many can you make? But you're always, if you're in Hollywood, you know, just any of you who want to make a movie or something, if you want to be rich and make a movie, go make a horror movie. You know, be inventive, but you can go make it on a digital camera. You can make it for cheap. And you could possibly make a ton of money. I mean, they're on the seventh one. But that first Paranormal Activity, you know, they made it for $15,000. $15,000. And it grossed $200 million. When you do that, they're going to make a bunch of them. It's kind of like Blair Witch. You know, they made that for $60,000. and they made $250 million. And then I think Saw was made for $1 million and made $100 million. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, now the original one back in the 70s. I mean, they made it for about $140,000, $150,000, which is about $700,000 in today's dollars. But in today's dollars, it made $150 million. And that is one of the most important kind of horror movies. Because, you know, it says it's based on a true story. Eh, not really. It's based on the events of, what's his face? God, I can't think of his first name. Ed Gein, I think. Anyway, he was known as the Butcher of Plainfield. And his life story also was the inspiration for Psycho, the inspiration for Silence of the Lambs kind of thing. I mean, he was a convicted murderer, body snatcher, and, you know, the police discovered that he had exhumed corpses from local graveyards. He had fashioned trophies and keepsakes from their bones and their skin, okay? And, you know, he was declared legally insane. I mean, all these kind of things, right? And he lived in a psychiatric institution until, for 20-something years, I want to say, after he was convicted. But yeah, he killed somebody in 1954 and 1957. Those were the two he confessed to. But Texas Chainsaw Massacre was the first horror movie that used power tools as murder weapons. And then, like, the killer being this faceless figure and also the killing of victims. So, what was another? Friday the 13th, the first one, I think they made it for about $500,000. And it made $40 million. And a lot of people don't, you know, they all think of Jason, but remember, Jason's not in the first one. No, it's Jason's mom who killed Kevin Bacon. Yes, he's in that movie. Even Halloween, I think they made it for $325,000, made $70 million. So if you're thinking about making a movie, go make a horror movie. Oh, I don't know. I guess I'll talk about it. You know, Whoopi Goldberg on The View the other day was talking about how Roman Polanski and that teenager, and I'm not talking about the French woman who accused him of violent rape, you know, this weekend, from however many years ago when she was 18. I'm just talking about the one we're all familiar with. And the girl, you know, what was she, 13, 14, I don't remember anymore. And Whoopi said, well, it wasn't rape. Yeah, it was. She thinks because it was, quote unquote, consensual, that it wasn't rape. And I think that's a problem that I see with the Epstein stuff. You have these girls going over there to give him massages for $250 or whatever. And then he reaches out and he touches them or caresses them or uses toys on them or whatever. And, or Virginia, who was young, and we say, well, Virginia had sex with Jeffrey Epstein. Sex implies consent. And to be consent, you know, there's the age of consent. And, you know, 13 or 14, whatever Roman Polanski's victim was, she was not an age of consent, so she cannot consent. You know, it is rape. It is sexual assault. Statutory rape. I've talked about it before. It's a strict liability crime. There's no intent. Okay? And when she says, oh, it wasn't rape. Yeah, it is rape. It's just, you know, if you want to, statutory rape has a different term than rape, you know, but it just, and so when you hear people talk about, you know, Epstein having sex with underage girls, he's not having sex with underage girls. He's assaulting underage girls. He's raping underage girls. And it does a disservice to say that he is having sex with them because sex implies a consensual act. And if you're underage, you cannot consent. The age of consent. How old, you know, it varies with states. It varies with countries. But it really ticks me off. And I'm guilty of it sometimes. I'll say, oh, Epstein had sex with somebody. And I catch myself. And it's a change in mentality. And just because a girl got paid $250 doesn't somehow make it right or make them less of a victim. All right, I think that's it. I mean, goodness, that's a gossip galore. I mean, an hour. Anyway, I hope that you guys have a great Saturday night, and I will be back tomorrow.